It's me, the LEEBOY TV. Wait, hold up. Sorry.
Lee Boy.
Look, I
was cooking, baby.
Yeah, I got it on speaker. It didn't pop over to me though. Look. Let me just go back to gallery. Let me stop playing. All right, it's me, the LE.
Hold on, say it again, right. My bad.
You need some time? All right.
Yeah, no, it gotta.
All right, nah. Here we go. We ready. It's me. All right. It's me, the LEEBOY TV.
Prime Nostalgia.
It's me, the LEEBOY TV. We're here on the PMP. I am your host, the co-host to the main host, Prime. We're just going to give you the designation as the main host. You are the creator of the Prime Nostalgia Podcast. You know, let's give him the guy his credit. What's up with you, Prime?
What's up? It's me. Like you said, P-R-I-M-E, and we here. So, you know, what's up?
That's right. And we got a super special guest, somebody that is very inspiring, someone that has a young legend in this game, been doing this since, I think, 3 years old, but we'll get into that. We'll get into the history of this man, because we got a few things in common, and that is the guy that you'll see on your screen right now, Darius Love. What's up, boy? Ooh, ooh,
ooh, ooh. What's up, family? How y'all yes, doing, sir, Prime? Fam. LEEBOY TV,
fam. Man, so glad to have you finally catch up with you, man. You know, of course, I've known about you forever. We're basically Nickelodeon family. We're both on the network, but I really got reconnected with you and your spirit and, you know, everything that you stand for. When Clubhouse first came out, you was hitting the rooms heavy, hitting the people with the knowledge, my man. Things have changed since you was back on Nickelodeon, for sure. You got a different head on your shoulders. Or were you always this guy inside? Or you could just give us a quick, you know, just catch us up a little bit.
Man, that's a really great question. And yes, we are Nickelodeon family for life. Mm-hmm. Big shout out Nickelodeon, everybody over at the offices and executive offices, whether it's in New York, whether it's in Florida, like we talked about, or here in Burbank, California. Nickelodeon gave me an opportunity to be able to be a part of history. Alex Mack is a timeless global brand that has touched so many fans, and they've grown with it even as adults. People want us to do a reboot. I mean, it's just amazing. I'm going to Natanya Ross's birthday party, who played Robin Russo, tomorrow. Me, Jason Strickland, we just concluded a second unit, a documentary starring Keanu Reeves, Halle Berry, Charlize Theron, Mark Wahlberg, Keanu Reeves, James Cameron. It's basically a documentary on second unit stuntmen and women for the most biggest films, biggest action star films. We just got accepted at Sundance. Been producing and working with Jason Strickland, who were behind the cameras, just like we were as kids in front of the camera. He played Jessica Alba's boyfriend on Alex Mack. So big shout out to the Alex Mack family. Always being God-driven, I had a different calling towards acting. I did a Black History play where I was Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, MC Hammer, and James Brown at my junior high.
Wait, all in the same play?
All in the same play.
Damn, bro, you're multifaceted. Look, multidimensional.
You know what it was I was able to take the activism and activate the acting through activism and looking at great leaders like Martin and Malcolm. And, you know, James Brown was also an activist in his own right. At Bancroft Middle School, we had to take dance. We had to take drama, and we had to take music, electronic music. So these were those different type of tools that I had no idea would fuel the career on a long-term basis. My parents sent me to performing arts school as punishment. So I didn't like acting. I didn't like singing in the church plays. It was a way of punishment. I used to lie real well. I was very charismatic. So they channeled the negative into a positive. And here we are 34 years later, you know, still acting, still doing what we love, and more importantly, turning that influence into helping others, motivational ministry, I call it. So it's always been a thing of purpose to take the opportunities and look at what's purpose-driven versus the perceptions. You know, I think a lot of us feel that the money, the fame, the fortunes, the cars, the attention is going to fulfill us, but nothing will fulfill us but our purpose, right? In which we were created for. And acting has allowed me the ability to get into motivational ministry. You can't be an example of something to motivate nobody until you are an example of something. So being playing the Mondos, the Janky Promoters, and being a young, all the way down to Alex Mack, being a young actor and a star, and now being an adult star, having a chance to reinvent and still have that wholeness and happiness and not have substance abuse or be imprisoned by the success and still could walk around and have great people like yourself, Lee Boy, to recognize absolutely the consistency, the history, and more importantly, the purpose.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to get into that because, like you said, you have a long story history from the Mondos, and you're one of the few people that were actually able to break that mold of the Nickelodeon, you know, that funk that we got on us. They'd be like, oh, look at that kid. He had picked some. Yeah, Nickelodeon. So you was actually one of the few that was actually able to break that mold. So that was dope. But we do need to start off for our fans of this podcast. It is, we do a lot of Nickelodeon, a lot of nostalgic stuff. Secret World of Alex Mack, where you played Ray Alvarado. Now, is Ray Dominican? Is he Puerto Rican? Or
That's a great, great question. Actually, he's not. He was African-American. His father was African-American. He's from the tribe of Judah. But okay, the reason why the name is Raymond Alvarado, the writer, all right, Ken Lippman, that was his best friend. Tommy Lynch and Ken Lippman, who wrote Alex Mack, one of their best friends' name was Raymond Alvarado.
Mm-hmm. And he was just a black dude that had the Alvarado.
They thought that that name was Raymond and Alvarado. You know, they thought that was the best ethnic name they could go with.
Well, shout out to them, man, because yes. No, definitely. I ain't gonna lie. Prime was like, was he Mexican on the show? I was like, nah, man, come on. First off,
answer your question. Where you at, Pete?
I was like, first off, black people got every last name under the sun. That's first off, because we from all over this globe. But that was just funny. But tell us, what was one of your favorite moments just being on that show? Or because you got to work with so many people coming up. You had Larissa Olenek, like you said, Jessica Alba, and she was like low-key a bully on the show a little bit. Like, what was it like just working with her and being on a cast at that time?
You know what was really the best moments is that we all grew as actors, as children, as friends, as adults. And to this day, we share this private nucleus of love that it's real. It's not because we work with each other. It's not because we're still getting paid. It's we share that growing pains in life that when I look back, when I just got my favorite memories of Jessica Alba, we went to Raging Waters. She's from San Dimas. Mm-hmm. So one of my best of friends, Kaz Wingate, he had a crush on her. And, you know, we went over Jessica's house. She let us come over. We're watching Godfather. And it's a scene where the Italians is explaining to keep the drugs in the black community. Right. And her dad was Italian, Mr. Alba, and I'll never forget, he pulled me in a room and he had a conversation with me as a man. And that conversation let me know why his family would be so successful. He always taught faith and family comes first. And, you know, always, you know, be a man of your word. And, you know, I'm proud of you, how you're saving your money, what you're doing. You know, we decided, wasn't this his daughter was a star? It wasn't that Larissa Olenek's mother was a star. So she found out I didn't have an agent. So she brought the Judy Savage, Fred Savage, Ben Savage's mother, who at this time was the biggest kid agency in Hollywood. And as Larissa was negotiating her contract, her mother pulled my grandmother aside and said, hey, well, it's time for renegotiations. You don't have representation. Let me introduce you to Judy Savage and help me get the same quota as Larissa. And being the number two star. And this was the type of family and environment. I mean, I have people like Todd Hillier, Burke Ellis, rest in peace, Alex White. Alex Wyatt, they would drive from Valencia and drop me off in Watts, California late at night as white Caucasian males.
Right.
You know, I remember around the time
it was
white people at Watts. It's late at night. They would pick me up, take me paintballing so I could still be a kid, They would take me to match. You know, these were these were my friends, because as a kid on the set, I didn't have other than the kids we worked with to be a young adult. So I would hang out with the gappers, the grips, the special effects. And these were the men I looked up to that were like big brothers, that when I wanted to go, I had a football game. I still played football, basketball, baseball. I had a marketing and street promotions company. So I called Loud Records. I felt guilty for my friends that didn't have jobs. I was on TV with money, and you're blessed to be a blessing. So at this time, I'm using my lunch hour on Alex Mack to fax. I'm using the fax machine and free paper, and I faxed all my first street promotions and marketing and promotions, and got the deal with Columbia Records, Loud Records, Def Jam Records, to where we were making $1,000 a week, all seven of my different friends from different high schools passing out mixtapes and albums and stickers. But I did that on the set of Alex Mack. I was able to create a business that empowered my friends. And we ended up doing the Wake Up Show tour with Outkast, Gangstar, Wu-Tang, Boot Camp, before they had their first platinum plaque. We were the promoters, which I learned very early about janky promoters and the whole promotional business through Sway. And so these were my great memories of Alex Mack, was having this personal, professional relationship with the cast and friends, but it turned into a family bond even to this day. You know, we're seeing our kids, we're going to birthday parties together, we're doing projects outside of Alex Mack. It's a circle of friends that have become a circle of a family.
And I wanted to go back real quick, because you said you got on Alex Mack without an agent. Can you tell us how that worked out for you?
Yeah, man. Everybody loves this story. So, you know, I went to this junior high with Bancroft Junior High with Brandy Norwood. Mm-hmm. At this time, Brandy was on the show called Thea. Yep. If anybody remembers,
never heard that of her. I never heard this Brandy Norwood chick. I don't know.
Yeah, man. Big shout out, Brandy. Me and her actually have the same guy, baby. Naisha Favorite, one of my best friends, Lancelot Favorite. His sister was her best friend. And my best friend's sister was Brandy's best friend. So we were all at Bancroft Middle School, hustling, dreaming the dream, living the dream. Ray J, we would catch the bus, Carson, you know, to go to Bancroft. I lived in Watts. They lived in Carson. So what ended up happening, man, was, again, I didn't like drama. I didn't like acting, but I was good at it. I had a video at the age 3 I did for Elton John. Age 7, I was the Just Say No to Drugs PSA spokesman. And age 10, I did my first film with Rick Elfman, Danny Elfman's brother from Oingo Boingo, called Shrunken Heads with Julius Harrison, who played the Mac. So by the time I got to junior high, I had credits. I was in SAG. I was kind of known as a kid on TV already, right? So the drama teacher, he was an ass. Excuse my language. He would basically make me feel guilty for being successful. I think what triggered it was one day I asked him, I'm like, yo, how are we going to learn acting out of a book? I said, acting is an action. I said, you give us a play. Let us get up on stage. Let people break their fear of talking in front of people. Get out of my room, Mr. Know-it-all. You think you do? You think you're the Hollywood star, and he would kick me out the class. But he would make me the star of the plays, because they were promoting my name to the school that, hey, we have Brandy Norwood at Bancroft. We have Darius Love from Alex Mack, and they would make money. So long story short, this one day, Nickelodeon came. This was the executive producers of Alex Mack. And they had seen a write-up in the paper of me playing Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, MC Hammer, and James Brown. And they had saw the write-up in the newspaper and auditioned the whole class, but I was ditching, because I didn't get along with the drama teacher. He would kick me out every time I come to class. Oh, here's Mr. Hollywood. I'd be like, man, whatever. But the dean, he gave me an A if I starred in the plays, because they used my name to promote, to get other money through the school. So I was learning politics early. So they come back the next day, Nickelodeon says, no, we want him. So they're pointing to the news article of me starring in that play. So I go in. This is the best part about this. This is how you know when it's yours and it's divinely aligned, you could mess it up if you want to. I had already auditioned for Alex Mack. Mm. I had knew the material. So when they gave me the sides, I looked at it and instantly my memory kicked in. I was like, oh, da-da-da. I said, I'm ready. I handed it back to them. They're like, you're ready? I was like, yeah, I'm ready. I didn't tell them that I had auditioned for them because I wanted them to be impressed with my memory and being able to recite and punctuate and articulate, et cetera. You know the game, right? Oh my gosh, this is perfect. We have a 5-year contract slated. We're looking for like a black character who's not a sellout to the blacks, who's not intimidating to the whites. He's perfect. Can we take him to audition? And the executive's like, hell yeah, take him. He doesn't come to drama class anyway. So I go and audition again for Tommy Lynch, Ken Littman. 30 minutes later, at an office in Hollywood, they take me out of my class, take me to the office. As soon as I finish that audition again, the executives go, oh man, this is, you know what? We need to take this to New York. So they took my tape, my audition tape to New York. Mind you, it's about 6 o'clock at night. The buses have left from school. So now I don't have the yellow school bus to get home. I take the RTD. Anybody know, being LA natives, we call that the rough, tough, and dangerous. So as I'm on my way home, because I knew how to ditch, I knew the city, I would ditch. So I was very, let's just say, young, skilled, and crafted, and gifted in knowing how to maneuver between the black community and the white community without getting caught by the police, right? I had auditions all the time. So this one time, it's my favorite moment. I'm coming home. And my mother's coming out. I was, boy, where are you? I'm like, Mom, pack your bags. We moving out of the watch. Our life is changing today. She's like, boy, where have you been? I'm like, Moms, I'm telling you,
look, for real. It's for real this time.
It's real this time. She goes, baby, they call. They want you. You got the job. I just fell down on my knees in the driveway, crying to the Most High, thanking them, because 16 people had got massacred 3 houses down in the apartment living in Watts. And my little brother, Chance Love, when we would come home every day, if he would hear a helicopter or a police siren, he would basically remiss on that incident that happened, thinking that we were near death again. And it just bothered me at a young age, at 12, 13, I knew that we shouldn't fear fearful being in our home. Your home is supposed to be your home of refuge, of safety, of peace, and sanctuary, right? And so I used to pray every day, Lord, Father, help me move my family out of Watts. And through the grace of God and acting and me humbling myself and channeling something I didn't want to do and to doing it, I think that was the most important decision I made in my life, because it altered which path I was going to go in.
So when you got there, what was it like meeting, you know, your castmates for the first time?
It was scary because I'm going to be real. I was trained that all white people want to kill us and don't like us. And it took a while for me to deprogram the Watts thinking and to being around on an all white set of people that have my best interests, that love me, right? That we have food differences. We have culture differences. We have a whole different persona that's perpetuated of how we're supposed to look at each other. So when I found out these people love me, got my back, are real. They even had to break some of the stigmas and found out that D-Love is loving, kind, intelligent. He's not a thug. He's not crazy. It was such an eye-opener. And I'm glad you asked that, because I think we all helped each other to look at, when you get exposed, it helped us look at life differently. That's why Alex Mack was such an amazing show, because you never saw a black boy and a white girl as best friends and really believed it on TV, like really felt it, you know what I mean? And I think that's why so many people resonate with that. And it was such an impacting image in a time where it's tension, where it's like, you know, you ain't supposed to date a white girl, let alone be her best friend, right? You're not supposed to, these two worlds don't exist. You got the urban community, you got the suburban community, but we showed a community of humanity, a community of just, you stop seeing me being black, you stop seeing her being white, you saw us as friends.
Right.
Do you think if you were on TGIF, you would have had the same type of typecast, even though they have similar type of shows, just on a different network?
No, because thank God It's Friday was, it was like urban, and Nickelodeon was definitely prime time, suburban, like, you know, you got to think about it. TGIF came around, we weren't used to seeing all black casts and all black shows, but we were used to watching Double Dare or watching Clarissa explains, like, that's all we had as kids, right? So now you're coming in an era where it's optional and it's a new option about us. So I knew immediately that me being already a star in that world could break the yoke of being typecasted in this new world. Because here I'm saying I've already got those demographics, I already got those followers, I already have proven that I can bring them to this world.
A little bit later, though, in your career, would we seen you doing a certain gangster role? A lot of times you was like the big homie that was like the gatekeeper, like, nah, you want to come through this hood, it's going to be coming through me. And we seen that in Janky Promoters. We seen that in Ways Deep. Now, do you think those were just the scripts that were available to you? Were those the stories being told at that time? I think that was like mid to late 2000s, maybe mid or early 2000s. What do you think changed as far as that you being portrayed on screen that way?
You know, I'm so glad you asked that question. And I'm so glad that we're able to talk freely on this platform, which is the reason why you don't see me in front of the camera as much, more behind the camera producing, especially after not playing the Tupac life story role, after doing the NWA voiceover for Mark Rose and NWA and doing the voiceover for Coachella and the Hologram, I discovered and had a spiritual awakening. And it was, why am I perpetuating negative stereotypes that I work so hard not to be, right? I work so hard not to be a gangbanger, a drug dealer, a womanizer, have a jail record. No. Nothing against anybody that has that path, that kind of test or testimony. It just was for me, choosing to the right over wrong was important, right? And being able to be righteous in a world where morals and ethics are somewhat pushed out of the room, are not prioritized. And perpetuating these negative stereotypes, it started to sit hard and heavy on my heart. And I had to make a decision about my art. It's either I can complain about, hey, these are the only jobs that I can take, or I can go make the content that I want to portray, which led me into the bigger picture productions, the Truth About Tupac, Truth About Cannabis, Truth About Police, Truth About Nipsey movement on YouTube, where I was able to use the YouTube studios to produce shows and content to bring forth the Global Good News Network, which is our own news platform, which is only positive news versus negative. When you grow up in Watts and you grow up in dope houses and you grow up in the struggle, it's just like a soldier who goes to war. They don't long to promote the negative. They actually resent it. They actually try to not remember or revisit that. And so for me, playing those roles helped have me revisit all the things that I worked so hard to get away from Watts.
We're not done with you, because we definitely got to get into some Tupac talk when we come back. But what we usually ask our guests is to recommend a song. And I know you have a special music video that I want to talk about, in just a bit. So can you recommend a song to our audience that they can listen to on the break? And then we'll be right back to discuss the rest right here with Darius Love. Any song in the world.
Absolutely. I want to go with Tupac. Definitely a Tupac, since we're going to talk Tupac. And one of my favorite Tupac songs is
Ambitions
as a Rider.
Can you drop the verse for us? You got the verse in your head or not?
Here you go.
Hey, because I seen you killing that California Love verse. You didn't destroy that a couple of times. But if not, don't worry about it. I ain't going to put you on the spot.
No, Ambitions as a Rider. Ambitions as a Rider is one of my favorite songs. And the reason why it's one of my favorite songs, because of this verse, it shows Pac's raw dynamics of being a Gemini, where he's got the yin and the yang. He's got the warrior and he's got the heart of a poet and a passion and the care and the concern. So Ambitions as a Rider, when he goes, my ambitions as a rider, ambitions as a rider. So many battlefield scars while dripping in plus scores. Life is a rap star, there's nothing without God. Was born rough and rugged, addressing the mass public. My attitude is fuck it, because motherfuckers love it to be a soldier. Must maintain a cozy at ease, because life is complicated, only what you make it to be. And my ambitions as a rider, catch her while she hot and horny, go up inside her. Then I spit some game in the ear, go to the telly, hope. You put with money in the bins, cause bitch, I'm belly broke. I'm smoking weed, bomb ass weed, I'm feeling crucial. From player, the feeling tight, the game is mutual. But hustle the player, the play motherfuckers, the play. Wishing on the competition, wishing on their stress. Booyah. I mean, I could go on and on, but I don't want to cuss.
I know you was trying to censor yourself. Look, as soon as you said I'm gonna go inside her, he was like, "Oh, I didn't pick the wrong verse." Hey, but we gonna drop it right here on the PNP. We gonna be right back. All right. We are back right here on the PMP. It's me. I already said it, LeBoyTV PRIME. And we got Darius, LOVE. Yes, it rhymes. Darius Love in the building from so many different projects throughout the nostalgic years. You know, on this podcast, we focus on the 80s, 90s, 2000s. This guy was right here in the thick of things in Hollywood, starting with Alex Mack, quote unquote, starting with Alex Mack. Before we get into Tupac, you started though at 3 years old, right? You started hella young?
Yes. And yes, then hella young. LTM video. I was a painter in the video. My dad was in, my stepfather, I don't call him my stepfather, my father who raised me, Howard Love, now fire inspector for the Oscars Dodgers. He worked with Michael Jackaway on plays, and actually Niecy Nash was a star in this play with Hill Harper called Reasons. And I would go with my dad to do this play. They would go on tour, and I kind of being in church plays and performing art school, and my real dad being a GQ model traveling around the world, it was in my blood. Mm-hmm. And living in Hollywood and just seeing it and being around it, it became second nature. So yes, I was in the Elton John video, age 3, age 7, to Just Say No, PSA drug spokesman, commercial kid. And then I did my first movie, age 10, Julius Harrison, called The Shrunken Heads, where I did like 3 hours of cosmetic makeups to be these shrunken heads and come back to life to avenge this gang that killed us. Full Moon production, didn't get my check, but got the respect. Everybody saw that movie, and that led to Alex Mack. And we've been on ever since, brother.
Hey, I'm going to use that one. Ain't getting my check, but I got the respect. Look, but look, I promise we're going to get to Pac. In fact, y'all already heard him do the verse. He already done killed that. But you did mention a music video, so we got to bring up this one that you was in. Prime don't know about this.
Now I know. But I'm saying
you didn't look it up. That's what happened.
No, the way that you said, no, guy, look, the way that he said, he's like, hey, we're going to get into that Janet Jackson, making it seem like what? Okay.
But anyway, it was Someone to Call My Lover video, right?
Yes,
Someone
brother,
to Call My Lover video. And look, look, before you go, hold up, my bad. I'll just say, you know, I was a huge Janet fan. I mean, obviously, who's not a fan of Janet? Yeah, first in the Jacksons and Dance Moves. This is when she had the belly out tight, and you know, the jeans was a little loose and she was moving it right. Yeah, all that, right? And so I'm just watching the video. It must have premiered one day, and I just seen Darius pop up like doing the sexy face. I'm like,
he got the look.
That's the homie from Nickelodeon, bro. I'm telling everybody. I know that's the homie. But yeah, man, just tell us about you getting on that set. Did you get to meet Janet? And what was it like being recognized for that? I'm sure people were running up to you around that time.
Man, this is a great, bro. Let me just say first, big shout out to you, Lee Boy, for doing your research and setting up the right questions, the right answers, and knowing my story, knowing my journey in the chronological order.
Right.
That's important. I really appreciate that. Yes, I met Janet, and this is the realest story of my career. So I was a love interest in that video, obviously. And this is where she met JD. Had no idea. She met JD and was dating him on this video shoot.
Right. So okay. This is a conflict of interest. I already look.
Right. So I get chose by Janet to be in this video. Anissa Williams and Kaz already says, no, you were chosen by Janet. So the last dude who was like in the Janet Jackson video was Jimin, who played, you remember Jimin, the dark skinned brother who was actually Russell Simmons's ex-wife's husband. You saw him in Amistad. He's the dark skinned brother. Remember, he was in the Janet video. So I'm like, Janet chose me for a video. I don't got no muscles. I'm like, just D-Love raw in his rawest form. I got the buckwheat nappy fro at the time. I was the first dude rocking the nappy fro when they say, no, you have to be clean cut.
Wait.
We had this discussion.
Before you go forward, we got to stop you right there. First one, you was the first one with the natural, the free, we say the free form fro. The free form fro?
The free form fro.
Okay.
I was told that you was not going to get the job, that's too Afrocentric. We want your hair clean cut. You know the game, bro. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like, you see what's on this hat, bro. And it's like always representing us and still being classy and not going to a point to where we're typical. We can be Afrocentric and be in our Black excellence without being typical. This was pre-Black excellence for me. You know what I'm saying? So at that time, I'll never forget. The first AD comes to me, he goes, hey, Janet wants to dance with you. Like, you're going to be dancing with her on this scene. You're going to be behind her, and you're going to get close with her and everything. You cool with that? I said, no.
Mm.
He says, what you mean? I said, bruh, I'm from Watts, California. I'm a real N-I-G-G-A. If I dance with Janet Jackson that close, y'all going to be firing me like you fired that drummer who said hello to her, who happened to play on tour with her. You have to have red wristbands to go 10 feet within her. There's a certain color wristband to be 10 feet. There's another one for 100 feet. One of the brothers who played drums for her on her tour happened to be an extra on the set. He thought he could go say hi to her. He got fired. I was making 20,000 or something like 30,000 to be in that video. You think I'm gonna let my emotions stop my money? So I told them, no, I'm not dancing with Jetty. They was like, they couldn't believe it. So it's a scene where she's there dancing by herself.
Yep, she's groovy.
And I gotta find somebody to call me a lover. And I'm like, y'all could do the scene where she's looking at me, and that's that GQ look. Mm. So that's my true story about that video. And to this day, when I see it, I be like, you idiot. You should have been right there holding her, getting that moment. You know what I'm saying? Who passes down the moment to dance with Janet? Only Darius Love.
And look, so the freeform fro, though, look, I have to rewind because we gave that credit. We gave that credit to Kobe Bryant. So you got anything to say, you versus Kobe on the freeform fro? Who had it first?
You ready for this? Magic Johnson was my business manager who introduced me to Kobe when I played in the Magic Johnson Midnight Summers event. And he said, hey, I got this dude that looked like you. I need to introduce you to him. It was Kobe Bryant.
And y'all do look like, I swear, so I was going to bring that up too. Look, y'all, especially in the Janet video.
I'm known as the Kobe Bryant Tupac lookalike on the internet.
Right.
I got pulled over by a police officer in my CLK Benz. They first came out. This is like Belly era, DMX, Nas, the CLK. I had one of the first, right? So I'm driving, and the police in a motorcycle, he's looking at me. I'm like, oh, it's about to go down. Snatch his seatbelt, making sure everything right.
Look,
You know what I'm saying? He pull up. He goes, is it okay if I have your autograph? And I'm thinking, you know, I'm like, D-Love is...
Ooh, Alex Mack is popping out here, look.
I'm popping, Todd. You know what I'm saying? I'm popping. I'm famous. I'm in my Benz. I'm doing my thing.
Yeah.
I'm like the top Black actor in the top three. This is before Michael B. Jordan era. Mm-hmm. I got the torch. So he pulls me over and he's like, yeah. So I'm like, so who you want me to make this to? So he's like, yeah, Mr. Bryant. Can you... I'm signing Kobe Bryant.
Oh Lord, he tried to sell that autograph and got denied. Look,
he was like, Kobe Bryant.
Oh,
the officer probably think he got Kobe Bryant autograph, bro. I wasn't gonna tell him, you know what I'm saying? I ain't Kobe because I didn't stand up or nothing. I'm in the Benz, I'm low key with my peacoat, collar tilted, I'm doing my thing. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to ruin his high hopes. I'm like, hey, I'm the closest looking thing to Kobe. If they ever do a movie, you got Kobe Bryant and Darius Love autograph.
Oh, Lord. That is dope. So, long story short, Kobe got the fro from you when he saw you. He say, I'm going to throw it out.
I think we both was, I will tell you this, if you go back and look, I was growing it at the same time. He was growing it at the same time. And it was divine because I think he was on the same thing, you know, like no one can box me in. Like I'm Kobe and I'm going to be free and being me and represent that. But he did it with such class. You know, you never looked at it like, why this boy in Coleman's here? You would hear him talk and he's articulate and he was very charismatic and he could speak multiple languages. You forget any imagery that Kobe presented. You know, you forget that he was black. There's very few that's Kobe Bryant. You know what I'm saying? And that, to me, is why I love being able to be considered, you know, man, you remind me of Tupac, or man, you look like Kobe, or, you know, you sound like Pop. You know, when you add these references from people, it's real. You know, you couldn't, I'm not running around with a bandana or a nose ring. I'm not running around dribbling basketball on the basketball courts. But for some reason, people connect us three in one. And to have the opportunity to do Tupac's voice in NWA, to have the opportunity to play Pac in a movie and then do it due to political reasons. I didn't like how they sued his mother and she didn't get a chance to tell a story. She went and we became close friends. Her and Layla Steinberg, big shout out Layla Steinberg, Tupac Underwood. We found it, the truth about Tupac. You know, integrity is my identity. And I don't need money because money's not going to morally or ethically fulfill me like doing the right thing, right? And the right thing is keeping righteousness over fame, keeping righteousness over greed, over, you know, wanting to have the me syndrome.
But rest in peace, obviously, to Tupac and to Kobe Bryant, too, you know, people that I quote on, you know, look up to still to this day, whether, you know, the regardless of their status on this earth, there will always be people that influence me. And so, yeah, like you said, just blessing to be able to be compared in the same sins with them. And I dare people to go back and watch that Someone to Call My Lover video. I swear you look dead on Kobe right then. And then and similar, you know, just kind of transitioning forward, similar to Pac, you knew that you, between you and Janet, it was some real stuff. And he got in trouble a little bit on his set with Janet. So you guys have even more similarities, even when it comes to Janet Jackson, because y'all already know that she could get the business. Now, let me stop. Shout out to Janet. But shout out to Janet. Connection, Lee. Yeah.
Shout out to Janet, the whole family, bro. And great connection on your part. Great connection, bro.
Because you like Pac in a lot of, you like Pac in a lot of ways. And it obviously, that's been a big part of your career is the work. And you've mentioned it. You did the voiceover. And that was when Mark Rose was playing Pac. Was that in the NWA movie?
Yes, sir. You could go onto the Truth About Tupac website and you'll see Mark Rose doing an interview with Big Boy talking about, when I played the role and now I'm getting ready to play him in a TV show. And you'll also see Demetrius Shipp on his interview saying, big shout out, Truth About Tupac, Asher Underwood, Layla Steinberg, Darius Love, because I had the, after doing Janky Promoters with Ice Cube, Mike Epps called me Tupac, I had the contract from actual Morgan Creek, the film that produced The Life Story. They gave me the LOI to play Tupac. And I started training through The Truth About Tupac for the role. And when I did the voice, I was hired by Afeni Shakur. She said, I will not sign off. Rest in paradise to Afeni, to Mama Faye. Said, I will not sign off on the voice of this actor. He doesn't sound like my son. So F. Gary, the mom, brought me in, did the voiceover, and he denied it. Right? And I wasn't going to beef with him or go air it until he went public on the radio, like accusing me as a liar. So he didn't know I had footage of me in the studio doing the voiceover with F. Gary.
Oh, yeah, so you in the booth. Yeah, I seen that.
Yeah,
Yeah. We seen it, Mark. Look, I'm now that I know he lying, we gonna call you. No, man, we ain't gonna make no beef. Come on now, bro. You gotta keep it 100.
I'm like, bro, I don't fight, and I'm not here to air you out. It wasn't even to compete with you. I didn't go out and say, oh, I got Demetrius Shipp the job. I created the online casting for all Tupac lookalikes for the Tupac life story biopic when I had the LOI. Mm. How many guys would basically call every Tupac in the world to go against them, give them a fair chance to audition when I already had the contract? That was because I was so content with this being my purpose. And I felt that each one of those individuals deserved a chance. And it was great marketing to see how many people look like Tupac, sound like Tupac. That was great content for the truth about Tupac in the movie itself. And these people deserve an opportunity. This goes to show the selflessness and then more importantly, being able to remove myself and let Demetrius play that role because you know what? He looked more like Tupac than me. Now the acting ability, he didn't have the years of acting like myself. So obviously.
And the spirit of Pac is a little bit more with my guy, Darius. Shout out to Demetrius. He definitely looks just like Pac. Throw on the nose ring, dead on. Bald head, and he was young because Pac was very young. He did
a great job in such a very this job showed me that it was one of those things that's going to be life altering and changing. You're going to have to be committed and it's going to change your life. And I want to say again a big shout out to Shipp because he actually to me was 100% his best. I think the production didn't embody what he brought. I thought the production could have been that much more better, but he brought what he needed to bring for that role. I just don't think the production matched him, which is why I exited from moving forward in that contract because I could see that the production level could not match the Pac energy. Right. And Pac fans are Pac fanatics. They are forever Pac fans. They know everything about Pac and why and where and how. And if you don't embody that and encapsulate that, you're going to lose. And it wasn't Mark Rose's fault. It wasn't Demetrius's fault. There's no such thing as bad followers, bad leaders. When you're hired on a job, you have directors, producers, writers. There's an agenda before you that you have to carry out. So I learned very quickly, if I'm not in control of the narrative or the fate now, for my years of being in the game, I'm not doing the job because I have to live with my integrity and my morals. I have to go out and see these fans later. I have to answer to them. And if I cannot answer 100% right, then I sold out.
Right. And so, I'm glad you got into that because I definitely was going to say almost what you said, that Demetrius had the look. He was young. But it's interesting to hear that you had that letter of intent and you kind of had the keys a little bit. But then they ended up in the movie. I liked it. Definitely like it. It's a good story. Definitely to show some kids or to show them about the history of Pac. It was a little bit Lifetime-ish. A little bit.
Yeah. you're great at this, brother. You're bored with this.
A little bit Lifetime-ish. So, I want to see what you would bring to the story. Are you still going to come through? Are you still working on a Death Row movie? Because I know that is part of, something that you were building towards.
I kind of let the whole Pac spirit rest.
Okay.
I learned that Darius Love is here to Darius with Love and that I don't need to play Pac to be Darius Love. Darius Love was playing Pac to preserve Mr. Shakur's legacy. It wasn't for Darius Love to create his legacy. And now that I've had enough time and the world's still asking, man, we want to see you do it, man. We want you to do it. I would rather be the guy to where everybody just wonders what it would have been like versus to go do it because it would look like I would be steadily chasing something that I really felt like I did my service. My goal was to keep the mission of Pac's story alive so they could make the movie. My job was to, through the truth about Tupac, bring his family, his friends, the inner core, Mr. Shore together to tell the story so that the movie and the fans could still uphold what this man has sacrificed for us. My job was to find the Demetrius Shipp who was born for it. My job was to back up Mark Rose, who maybe looked like it and didn't have that pocket sway, could make the mother sign off. My job was to do all of the jobs that it took so that Mr. Shakur's legacy could get the proper flowers and roses that he deserved. That was my job. And I feel I served it and I did it. And now it's time for Darius Love's legacy. Darius Love's mission and purpose outside of the shadows of others live. Maybe I might play the Kobe Bryant story. I don't know. But what I do know is the journey and not the destination is the goal. And I'm so fulfilled to see so many brothers contribute to Mr. Shakur's legacy and for them to start their own.
Absolutely.
I got a quick question. Just for all the filmmakers and directors and people that make short films, will you be open to doing like a short 10-minute stuff like that? Okay.
Absolutely. Because Ryan Coogler's team, a good friend of mine, Ephraim, was at YouTube. He hooked me up with Ryan Coogler, and they wanted to do, this was before when I was going out to Oakland training with the Shakur family. This was before Black Panther. This was even before Apollo Creed. Ryan Coogler's team wanted to do a short on Tupac with me, and we were working on it, and we still have another a book. My partner, Asher Underwood, is called The White Book. It's a book of where it's more a conspiracy based where Pac could still be alive and the things that he would be doing. There's the death row. There's so many things in the works still that you could potentially see me possibly portraying that. I'm still getting options and offers. I just, you know, I talk to God and I really don't want the fans to think that I'm chasing Mr. Shakur's legacy and that I'm bitter or that I just want to make it clear that if I do decide to ever do anything with Pac, is it again the very reasons why I got involved, which is to uphold his legacy and to do right by it. It's not for Darius to become super famous off of him or any of that. It's to really do right by it. It has to be the right substance, the right content, the right message, and allow for us to see something or learn something that we haven't yet with the current projects that are out. Thank you for that question, Brian. Great question.
No problem.
Yeah, and I appreciate your stance on that, man, because a lot of people would look at it as just an opportunity to, you know, take advantage of. So it's good to hear that you said integrity is your identity. So it only makes sense that you would take that stance. I just have one last question, though, about Pac, because you guys are, you know, your spirits are so similar. Do you think now, was he an influence on your spirit? Did his music help you get to where you are as far as your, you know, your morality, you know, your boisterousness, your voice? Or do you think it's just that you guys are from a common space? Because I ain't gonna say LA is full of Pacs, but there are a lot of people that just, you know, we got that fighter spirit in us. We go getters. We have this things where we just suppose, you know, the street and gangster mentality, but we really have this spiritual lifestyle that's within us. And they mesh and they, you know, it brings out a lion in us. You know what I'm saying? So do you think it's that he had influence over who you are? Or do you think you guys just have common space, common experiences that kind of make you guys similar?
In the beginning, I didn't like Pac. Mm-hmm. I was a Nas, Wu-Tang. I used to get in fights in Watts. They would call me East Coast. Like, you know, you love the East Coast. This is when the East Coast and West Coast thing was big. Because growing up in drug houses and uncles and gangsters and, you know, having my auntie's ex, you know, substance abuse and having all of those, let's say, all of the statistics, all of the stereotypes, I lived it, which is why I can portray these roles. So when I saw Pac was angry and young, and when I was young, I felt like he was perpetuating the message of anger and he was just so, and it was more like, I got the drugs, I got the cars, I'm the man. See, gangsters follow, soldiers take orders, but warriors have none. And I've always had a warrior spirit. I would fight the bullies, you know, growing up. And then as I grew up and I learned Pac, when I had to study him, and I started looking at, he was like a news reporter. He was reporting these negative incidents. He was reporting on the pain. He was reporting on what we as a people struggle as a whole. So as I got more mature, as I studied him, I saw way more similarities than indifferences. And the word wasn't influence. He positioned me to carry the baton and the torch through the journey of the opportunity to portray him. It helped me spark my Pac energy for my legacy to carry on that torch of warriors and activists and activating that Pac energy in others. I now feel that it's my duty as Darius Love to Darius with love, but to activate the next Pac energy. That's why he says, I will not change the world, but I will spark the brain that does.
And look, that's perfect, because I was going to chime in and ask, who do you think would be that next person if you could choose one? Rest in peace, Nipsey was the first one that came to my mind.
And, with the high school, he was it. And he was the closest. He was the realest. I believe every 20 years, we get someone, you're like, who is that? That is a Nipsey. That is a Tupac that has that influence. And for me, everyone from Nipsey to Pac that knew them all say, D, it's on you. What's up? What you doing? And what I learned from them was to stay stealth, stay under the radar, stay doing the work without foretelling, without looking for accolades, without looking for credits or awards. Just do the work. Do the work, stay out the way, and let God make his way. So I feel it's on me, and I feel that it's on me to continue to activate others in that same energy, in that same mind state, right? I think as young entertainers, as young celebrities, we've been taught by so many others, it's about what you got and not about what you represent. And we got to keep, so very few of us that can keep, that has that kind of impact and influence on others to remind them of where we come from. And I'm one of those that is still alive and left. And that's my legacy and my purpose versus perception.
I just love, you know, like I said, your spirit. Before we get out of here, I don't want it to be too lengthy, but I do want to give you the opportunity just to tell people about your faith as a Hebrew Israelite and how you got into that. And if you want to inspire someone, maybe they could take a path to change the world on their own. So anything you want to say about that? And then please let us know where we can find you as well.
Absolutely. First and foremost, all praises to Ahayah Bahashem Yeshayah. That means the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit in the Hebrew language. And, you know, being a truth seeker, growing up in the Christian church, my father being a Muslim from the FOI, one of my godfathers and people being Catholic, working with the Mormons in the farming and food industry, and the last name being Love, and first name Darius. I'm here to Darius with Love. I was diligently seeking God, always listening to his voice from the moment he told me to do Alex Mack, and going to the church, being in the church plays and choirs. But it just, something was missing. I knew it was more, our history. I stumbled upon Deuteronomy 28 through 68, and I realized the 400-year curses that God put us in, which depicted and showed that we were the true Jews. The Jewish community didn't go into yokes of irons, didn't come on slave ships from Egypt as slaves. They weren't women or children, were sold in bondage. This is what the scripture, Deuteronomy 28 through 68, explains. And it explains that we were cursed because we didn't keep God's laws, statutes, and commandments, which was given to Moses. And once I learned that God's laws and God's love was his 10 commandments, his laws. Because if I love God with all my heart, right, like I love my neighbor, like I love myself, would I lie to Lee Boy? Would I steal from Prime? Would I kill? Would I bear false witness? That means murmur and gossip. Or would I commit adultery with your wives? And the last and most important out of the Ten Commandments is to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Now, why did they change the day of worship to Sunday from Saturday? Because they knew from Friday night, which is the true Sabbath, to Saturday night, that's when the most of the world's temptations are there for you to sin. What do we do on Friday nights? We go to clubs. What do we do on Saturday nights? We watch football games. Games and sports were created to take our attention away from God. This is where the Olympics came from with Caesar. And so they changed the day. They changed and put all of these different influences other than us being able to serve God. So therefore, we sin. As long as we sin, they win. They put the drugs in our community. They put the alcohol. They put the strip clubs. They put all of these things that go against Leviticus 24, which are our dietary laws. If we're eating certain foods, if we're praying on a certain wrong days, if we're calling out the wrong name of God, then they keep us under this 400-year curse in Deuteronomy 28 through 68. And that proves that we and all 686 prophecies have come true. And that proves that we are the true Jews of the Bible, because not the Jewish community, not their Holocaust was 400 years. They didn't go on slave boats. They didn't go under the atrocities that all of our people have been under. And whether Jew or Gentile, this is not a black or white thing. This is a love thing. Whether Jew or Gentile, we all have salvation. Christ says in Matthew 5:17, I did not come here to do away with the laws nor the prophets, but to fulfill them. Christ was our ultimate example of what love looked like. He came and he lived the laws, which are love. God's love language is love. The one thing we have not done as humanity is love one another, which is why we will perish. He is waiting on us to come back and love one another, to gather ourselves from all four corners, a certain remnant of the 12 tribes. We are not Puerto Ricans. We are not Haitians. We are not Mexicans. We are not Native Americans. We are the same blood. We come from the bloodline of Adam, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the blood of Christ, our Mashiach, the Messiah, our Savior, is what's going to save us, right? Because his blood was shed. I always ask people, I say, do you believe in Christ? They say, yeah. I say, you believe in Christ enough to where you got baptized, you received the Holy Ghost and remission of your sins? They say, yeah. I say, well, if you believe that, then why are we still being judged? They said, wow. I said, if Christ did everything, why are we still being judged? We're being judged on if we're keeping the law, statutes, and commandments, right? And the law, statutes, and commandments is God's love. And it's the love of one another. So again, I'm Darius Love. I'm here to Darius with Love. And in Israel, my name is Barak Abid Yashareel, blessed servant of Israel. If you are looking to learn more about how to get protected and marked in this day and time, how to find land that is fireproof, windproof, bulletproof. I'm working with our GSTD, Global Self-Sustainable Technology Development Company. We are developing farmlands with the Dr. Sabi formulas. We have all the ionic minerals in the alkaline water. We have solar and wind and fireproof, bulletproof materials that we're creating these modular homes so that we can have safe spaces. We're creating a database that equals a marketplace, that equals a safe space for those that understand what day and time it is. The mark of the beast is here. It's more evident. All 686 prophecies have come to light. We're in Jacob's trouble, which is 3 years that we will be persecuted for having the blood of Christ in our veins. They understand the power where we shift in December 21st, 2021 from being victims to victors. This is why you saw me on the Clubhouse cooking with RZA, cooking with brother RZA, cooking with Waka Flocka. We have over 4,000 people. You saw I had the preppers list, a 20 years prepper list we gave. You see that we were talking about developing these lands and starting to get organization within our nation, which is the reason of forming the National Trust and being having the National Trust be live on the Global Good News Network. Because there's the false evidence, which is fear, false evidence appearing real. The fear that they're forcing us to be triggered through our emotions, to our children to be vaccinated, are losing our jobs, we're not able to get food. The fear, they want us to make decisions to where we don't operate under what's ordained. We must accept what's ordained without emotions and understand that there is a divine prophecy taking place and that those that love God and love one another will be protected. But those that love this world and want to see this world go on and fear what man is doing, man can only kill your celestial body. but God can take your celestial body and your soul. So fear God, which is the beginning of all understanding, Proverbs 1, and come back into these law, statutes, and commandments, which is our covenant in Exodus 20, 28, and read Deuteronomy 28 through 68 so you can break the curse and come back into the blessings. If you have any questions, please DM me, Darris Love, like it sounds, D-A-R-R-I-S-L-O-V-E. Please DM me and please go to any of the websites of our YouTube channels. And I'm looking forward to a bright future of love, prosperity, and peace for all those that love God. I thank you again, Lee Boy and Prime, for this opportunity. The torch is in your hands. The students has become the teacher. You motivate me. I hope to motivate you. And it's no one bigger or lesser or greater in God's eyes. And with that being said, Qam Yasharala, that means rise, nation of Israel.
There we go. Y'all heard it right there from Darris, a.k.a. Big Barack in the building. Shout out to my guy. This has been a dope episode of the Prime Nostalgia Podcast. I am, like he said, Lee Boy. Find me at LeeBoyTV.com, at LeeBoyTV across all socials. And yeah, go check me out on my .com. You'll find a new episode with me and Fuzz talking about that damn vaccine, man. Get in tune. I had to say it because he was talking about it. But y'all go see the message I got with me and my guy Fuzz. Prime, tell the people where to find you, man.
Twitter, Instagram, KDNG Prime Time. Follow the podcast at Prime Nostalgia Pod. And I got a special project coming out. It's in the works. I got that too.
In the works. So stay tuned. Yeah, look, keep building up the hype. You heard it right here first, right here on the Prime Nostalgia Podcast. It's been real, y'all. Y'all go follow my guy Darris and we out of here. And before we do it, what do we always say, Prime? What do we always tell the people?
Prime time.
It's all the time. Prime time, all the time. We out, baby. All right.
Love, family.